Hey, Lily, it's time for us to do another episode on AI and product.
Oh, I like these episodes, Randy. I mean, when's the last time that something really changed the way that we do our jobs on a regular basis? It's exciting. But promise me, we're not going to do the thing that all the other podcasts have done when they discuss AI?
You mean ask one of the AIs to write our intro and then joke about how we're either out of a job or make fun of it for how wrong it gets the tone?
Well, yeah, exactly that. I still think I can spot one of your jokes a mile away.
I think I'm flattered by that. I'm going to choose to be flattered by that anyway. So, who are we chatting with this week?
Well, there are two types of people that are good to talk to you about this topic. People whose companies are doing things with AI and people whose companies serve others who are doing things with it. So we've got someone who does both.
Yeah, Pendo's been doing some good stuff in this space, but their CEO, Todd Olson, also spends a lot of time talking to others about what they're doing and what they need. So we asked Todd to come on and share some of what he's learned. And we'll do it right after this music. The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product. Every week on the podcast, we talk to the best product people from around the globe.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and discover loads of free resources to help you with your product practice. You can also find more information about Mind the Product's conferences and their great training opportunities happening around the world and online.
Create a free account on the website for a fully personalized experience and to get access to the full library of awesome content and the weekly curated newsletter. Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities. There's probably one near you. Todd, thank you so much for joining us again. It's been a while since we had a chance to talk. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So for anyone who doesn't know, can you just do a quick introduction? Who are you? And tell us just the two-minute version of the Pendo story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am Todd Olson, CEO and co-founder of Pendo. Pendo is roughly 10 years old. Now, you know, we hit our 10th birthday a few months ago. What do? Well, our mission is to help improve society's experiences with software. So all of us use software all day long, and we want to make sure that software is actually delivering value to users and helping them get them to, you know, the software does what the users want them to do. And so we have a broad platform, a variety of capabilities that really empower product teams to help make sure that software delivers on that value.
Great. So we're here today because you did a talk at Web Summit a few months back talking about some of your experiences and some of Pendo's experiences with AI and some of the things that you've learned from it. And we wanted to dig into that. And I think what I really liked about it was, I'll flatter myself. I wrote a book a couple of years ago called What Do We Do Now? And that was pretty much the theme of your talk. It was going back to basics. It's what do we do? So, you know, throwing away the roadmap, reprioritizing, going back to basics. What does this look like to you? How do you even start with AI?
Yeah, so there's a variety of pieces that we did, and I'll go back even a little bit farther. So we actually had hired and started sort of a machine learning effort a year and a half, 2 years ago, when we had a team in Israel working, and they had a handful of projects and we're delivering value. But of course, when ChatGPT hit the market, it like totally shifted our thinking and frankly, the state-of-the-art technology. So like what we had now available at our fingertips was just fundamentally different than before. So I think at that point, our engineers, our people, us, all of us were playing around with this technology, probably like everyone listening was. And like, wow, it can do this and it can do that. And I think at that point, what we started seeing is a lot of people just using AI randomly, it could do this or it could do that. And I started seeing little features pop out, and I call them like AI for AI's sake. It's like, oh, we can drop this in an LLM and get a summary out of it. It's like, well, our users need a summary of these things. Oh, we hadn't thought about that, but it's really, really cool, isn't it, Todd? So I think, you know, one of the things I realized was that if we don't sort of organize it and create a strategy and a vision around how AI can help improve our product experience, improve our customers, we're going to get technology for technology's sake, just like lots of other trends we've seen in the past. And AI is no different from any amazing technology transform that we had. Like you remember the early days of mobile? The number of things that did not belong as a mobile app that we had to like all download, and then a bunch of them went away because it's like, okay, we're never going to do that on our phones. So it's kind of ridiculous, but it was cool, right? I mean, to this day, Pendo still does not have a mobile app because, be honest, like, most people are using us in front of a computer. So, but we got, by the way, we had one for a very short period of time because it was cool and we could build it. So I think AI is really no different. So I think step one was getting like our leadership team in sort of a brainstorming room. We did an offsite for like 4.5 hours and we're like, what are all the possibilities and what do our customers really want from us, from Pendo? Like, cause you gotta think like, other vendors will do other things and we should let them do those things. I mean, they may not exist yet, but assume they're having their own offsites. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to go in that direction, but what are things that we and only we have? And we kind of went back to some of the basics and, you know, focus on things like jobs to be done. And like, what job are we actually automating? You know, if, you know, the whole concept of generative AI is automation. Well, what are we trying to automate? Like, what are the really painful things that we think that this technology can automate? How painful are those things? Is it valuable to the user? So I think that's kind of where we started. And we started with that vision. The second major thing that we did is we wanted to sort of like, okay, now that we have a vision, we wanted to unlock creativity from our engineering team. The reality is if you're like me and like our head of product and like three other executives to come up with like an AI strategy for this brand new technology, it's just not going to be as good as if you don't enlist all the support of like all the really smart people here at Pendo. So we did a hackathon, and hackathons are primarily product engineering events at Pendo, but it does often bleed into other organizations. Really, we let anyone who wants to join it can just join it, and there's like lots of swag. And we decided that we didn't want to force people to do AI projects. That didn't feel like aligned with our culture and what the hackathon was about. However, we do give out cash prizes for the winners. And we said we were going to give out cash prizes only for AI projects. I will say someone did something non-AI that was amazingly cool. We still paid the cash prize for that because it was just too cool to not pay. But yeah, and then there after that, we had 38 examples of how our products can use AI that aligned with our vision. So we kicked off the hackathon and we shared the vision. We said, hey, please, please, please innovate in these areas. You don't have to, like, do whatever you want. But we got 38. Maybe not all were aligned with our vision, but a bunch were. And then we started to find ones that we felt, you know, really aligned with it well. And we started productizing them. That's kind of like how we started last year and sort of where we are today. And this year, just for context, we're working on a huge AI project that will launch later this year that we came up with fully a year and a half ago, or just a year ago, roughly. And now we're starting to build it. And that is super interesting. It's a kind of a combination of LLMs and then our own internal models. So it's highly sophisticated stuff.
And it's interesting when I hear you talk about it. So it sounds like for you, AI now, you know, we talk about AI as being, you mentioned like machine learning early on. But when you talk about the vision for AI, are you talking specifically about a use of ChatGPT or like large language models? Or no. Is it still just anything?
Yeah. And you know, it's even like, I don't know, when Apple released their like Vision Pro, they use the term machine learning instead of AI. They wanted to, you know, because they're Apple and they can kind of do whatever they want. So they decided to use their own term. I think people do associate specifically generative AI with GPT or ChatGPT like applications or LLM specifically. And no, when we think of our strategy, it is broader than that. And it's a hybrid approach, you know. Yes, we leverage LLMs because they're amazing at certain things. And that was one of the first areas that we started to innovate within our products. I think the nice thing about LLMs too is that they're widely available APIs. Just call an API, you get back an answer, you can integrate it. So what that meant for us is I didn't need to have like a dedicated team of AI people. I can tell every AI, every team at Pendo who's working on any feature, hey, if you have an application for LLMs, just try them. Use them. And that's where a lot of the early innovation happened because it was kind of easy. Now, look, there's cost implications, privacy implications, legal implications. Like it is, shipping a piece of software that abides by that is way harder than playing around with GPT in your spare time. So I will say that, like anything we build, we had to sort of, you know, think about, like, actually the cost is a really fascinating thing too, and that's anyone doing cloud computing has to think about that. But then we, within our AI work, we have our own internal models, and we leverage those models to do generative applications, you know, in terms of like generating a set of insights that people should be looking at and sort of triaging, or we're working on a capability now that's going to basically auto-generate a PLG campaign. That's our big release next year. And that's, you know, it's a combo of the LLMs, but I think the secret sauce is really our internal models, which is really a tiny model. So, I think tiny models, I mean, set lots of tiny models that are purpose-built for specific applications will ultimately be, I think, having a huge impact on the industry. Because if you think about what that means, is a tiny model for we take all of the usage data we have, so all the product data we have, we shove it into a model and we use it to say, okay, if I do these things and I generate this, what is the predicted outcome from it? And we're leveraging our unique data set to do generative things. And to me, that's super exciting because it's very differentiated. Anyone can use an LLM in their product, but no one has our data. So if we find ways to leverage that data to drive real value, solve real pain, you know, solve a core job to be done for our customers, like, it's super unique.
Let's dig into that a little bit more, the practical side of developing with this technology, because I've seen so many times in my career, people, you know, something new comes out and people think it's like sprinkling magic pixie dust. They start with the technology rather than the business case or what is the thing that's going to make them special. So I'm curious, you know, how do you go about this? How do you determine where this is potentially going to add value and what you want to do with it?
Yeah. Yeah. And isn't it funny that all the AI features literally have magic wands and pixie dust as the icons? So like it's even like heightened in this new world, because like literally that is now the visual identifier for AI. It's like a magic wand with sparkles that come out of it, which is cool looking and makes me want to hit it. But yeah, it also could lead to, like, honestly, some useless product design. So I often start with the jobs to be done that we're solving, like what is the pain that we're automating or resolving from customers. And I go back to our core ICP and personas, and our, you know, core persona is a product manager. And what are LLMs good at? It's processing qualitative data, specifically English language data is what it's particularly good at. So it's like, okay, what part of a product manager's job involves handling significant amounts of qualitative and or textual data? And the first thing is surveys. You know, or customer feedback. It's feedback requests. It's feature requests. It's NPS answers and quals. So that is the first place we started with LLMs, because it was like a perfect application from it. I mean, like I was talking to a product manager the other day at a large company, and I mean, this was a shocking figure, but this is what he said. He said he gets 10,000 feature requests a month from customers. 10,000. He drops it all into an Excel spreadsheet, and he searches for terms like ease of use or, I don't know, export or integrations. And he's looking for trends. Now, by the way, no human being can look at 10,000 things and actually find a trend. I mean, that is simply not possible. And that is what AI is incredibly good at, looking at 10,000 things and automatically. So that was one of the early areas that we kind of, so when we came up with our vision, as I talked about, that was one of the three kind of pillars of it. Pillar one is like help product managers synthesize qualitative feedback, help them build evidence for the why behind what their engineering teams want to build. And I think, you know, a core job to be done as a PM, like your job is to answer why. Why are you building this thing? Who's it for? Why are we doing it? What did they ask for? And I think is an incredible application. So that was one of the first pillars. One of the second areas that we had a lot of qualitative data, or text, I should say, content, is we have this in-app messaging platform. We communicate with users. And building guides takes time. It takes time. So we were wondering, okay, well, if a customer already has a document on how to use a piece of software, can we take that content and build like little messages that guide people through it, because, you know, if it has this concept of a step by step, would it be smart enough to do that? Turns out it works pretty well. Works pretty well. Like literally you type in like what you want to do and it goes out to a knowledge base and comes back and boom, auto builds it. Now, is it done? Not done, but it saves you 60% of the time, 75% of the time. I mean, that is very cool. It's generative. It's like it, it of course that's a generative application that is leveraging our APIs. It's doing a bunch of other work and it is super, super, super cool. So that was like the second pillar is, we called it, how do you product enable existing content? You know, no one wants to read PDFs or a bunch of knowledge bases. You want it right there in context, but it's trapped in these other systems. So how do we untrap it using an LLM? So that's the kind of second pillar. And that solves a real pain because people spend hours and hours and hours doing this. So that's kind of like how we started. I mean, another more recent one that we're building actually right this second, which is in that same vein of kind of product enabling content, is localization. Like it is painful. I was at a customer dinner on Wednesday night. The guy's like, that's painful. Like you export things out, send it to a translation house, re-import it, check it manually. I mean, it sucks. Let's just be honest. It's terrible, but you're an international business. You want to put things in customer's language, kind of a must have. Now we have features that we're finishing up now that you like literally hit a button and it uses these amazing translation languages, all powered by LLMs that like give you really accurate views. It's a pain. Like, I said three things and I focus on the pain first. Technology serves the pain and it just happens to be a better answer than any prior answer that we had before.
And all of those pains sound very familiar to me as someone who is, you know, working on a product. Were those things that were already on your roadmap and now you're just approaching them in a different way with the use of AI? Or had you kind of like gone, we can't really do anything with this because, you know, we can't automate it, or there isn't the technology available to do anything game changing in this area?
Great question. All your questions are great, by the way. I hadn't thought of. The answer is yes. So both is the accurate answer. Yeah, like the example I had of auto generating a guide from existing knowledge base, that was definitely not on our roadmap. We had not even thought of it. When we realized it was possible, and that was in some of the brainstorming sessions, and then the hackathon just did it. And these are 3-day hackathons. I'm like, wow, that is super cool. Okay. And super valuable. So that one was one where it was kind of an organic, like, yes, we should do this. This is like a 10X feature. I love it. The other piece is like what we're on a roadmap. We knew people were, for example, struggling, product managers were struggling to triage, you know, these 10,000 items they're getting a month. Like that's been a pain I've been wanting to solve for years. And we've done little things along the way to certainly address it. We made it easier, made it better. We've had filters and this and that. Like, so yeah, we've attacked it for years. It's just this technology is such a great solution to that problem. So it did inform like how we rethink about our roadmap around it, but I don't think it changed really our strategy around that product. We know the pain, we know what we're trying to do for product people. That one felt more like additive. And like, you know, accessibility, we've had accessibility in our product for a long time and we know it sucks and it's painful. So I think now that we have a better solution for it, I feel like a very natural answer is that. So it's both, right? It's a combo. Like sometimes this technology shows you something that you didn't believe was possible. And then you're like, yeah, let's do that. That seems really, really awesome. But sometimes it's just a better answer than what our previous answer was.
So you're telling us stories about where it's worked well, where it's helped. I know in my own experiments, sometimes it goes a little skewy and makes things up and doesn't work quite as expected. So I'm curious, where have you had a false start in using this technology, using AI approaches to things? What did you learn from them?
Yeah, so I'll tell like an interesting story and it's very honest. So as I said earlier, we started with our own machine learning models prior to these LLMs coming out. One of the first problems we're attacking was classifying MPS qualitative data. So you get in these long text and people want to know like what's the general theme or sentiment? What's this about? And this is an area, go back to jobs to be done, generally speaking, even at Pendo, so our own people would do this, we would export all the quals, we would put them in a spreadsheet, we would manually assign a theme to it. That theme would then generate reports that went to executives, and even the board of directors would see this stuff. And so they would tell us, like, hey, our NPS has gone up or it's gone down, this is why. And that would help, frankly, be the why behind certain investments. Like, oof, people don't seem to like our analytics these days. We're going to throw three teams on analytics and we're going to address this issue. So that's how we've generally used NPS as a service measure of sentiment. And like, for example, we made a boneheaded decision a few years ago around understaffing support to save money. And guess what? Like, support as a theme and NPS, like, literally skyrocketed. We pivoted, made changes, and then all of a sudden it comes back down again. So that's the pain. That is the job to be done. But it is a manual process, and everyone has complained about it. So we started building our own machine learning models. And what we learned is that they were technically correct, but they weren't something I could ever put in front of, like, our board of directors, for example. Like, it would parse out this large piece of text, and one of the tokens that came back, one of the themes, was datum, the singular word form of data, which I don't know an English speaker that actually uses that word. So, like you just would never do it, because, like, never one piece of data. There's always more than one. But the machine picked the singular form because it was technically correct, I guess. So that was, we can't ship that. Like, that just, we can't ship it. Like I would never do that. So we had to actually, so we did a couple things differently. So now the other thing that's part of this is, right as we're ready to ship this GA, ChatGPT came out, and we're like, ooh, did we just waste like a year and a half of development on this, like, homegrown thing? And so a lot of stress around it, a lot of conversations. And so we actually paused GA to figure out how LLMs did it. And so we did a couple things. I'll explain. One is, when we see text for the first time, we have no themes available, or we have a limited number of themes. We use GPT to pick the one word theme. And guess what? GPT is better than picking the word datum. It just is. It won't do that. It's smarter than, like, kind of generic models. But even what it picked wasn't awesome, and it was not perfect. So then we decided to keep our own internal models and have them have basically unique training sets. So now I can go in, or our product ops team can go in, and if it doesn't like a theme that was assigned, it reassigns and trains. So eventually, over time, you get to a point where it's as good as a human would do it, which is what you need. It is like that is the requirement. The requirement is, if I'm putting something for my board of directors, I want to literally hit a button, exports, and it goes, and me do no work. That's true automation, right? But it takes a bespoke trained model. It cannot be generic, because it has, like, we use the word usability. I don't like the word UX. I don't want my board members to have to think what UX means. I want them to say usability. So that's a Pendo thing. But, like, your company may want to use the word UX and show it in front of their, so, like, it has to be a completely terrible model. So this is a project that, frankly, we should have shipped in like a year, that ended up taking a year and a half, mostly because technology landscape was shifting under our feet while we're doing it. Plus, then we decided we had to build our own, like, version of training, which was a much heavier lift in terms of do it, just so we can get kind of, like, honestly solve the job to be done, which is, I want to go from raw data to board slide, and we won't get there if we don't have all of these pieces together.
I think one of the things that's feels like a bit of a theme in what you're saying as well is, like, that shifting landscape of how technology is moving forward, whilst you're also trying to, like, plan your product and work on your product, but also being able to just play with that technology and see what it does under certain, like, conditions, or, like, when you do, you know, when you try and make it do certain things for you. Do you have, like, you mentioned that you did a hackathon, which to me is like that sort of ultimate form of play, but how do you sort of embed that kind of culture of play and learning with, like, new technology like this to ensure that you're, like, getting the benefit of everyone in the team, like, understanding what the capabilities are and aren't?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so one of the things we also did around the time of the hackathon, but then even subsequently, is that we decided we weren't married to an LLM solution. We knew it was kind of wild, wild west. All these things are brand spanking new. There's different cost implications. We have a long-standing relationship with Google, but Google was behind OpenAI at first. So we decided we would play around with all of them And even to this day, we actually use more than one LLM in our product. And we have now learned like what prompts work well for which LLMs, which yield different results. And there's a constant experimentation. And our product and their QA teams are spending a lot of time just honestly finding out what works the absolute best. So today I can, I think it's a combo is the very, very short answer. I think over time, we're evaluating whether we give customers the choice of which one they want. I mean, we're looking at in foreign countries where language does differ enough where it would actually almost warrant like a specific LLM for that particular customer, which I think is a pretty interesting problem domain. But, you know, the other things like privacy and things like that are also a big piece of it. But I'll go back. I think one of the things that people may hear about is this concept of prompt engineering. And prompt engineering is almost a new type of engineering. It just involved like what you ask, how you ask it, and what context you pass it. It dramatically adjusts the results. So that's led to like new innovations, like this whole RAG thing, which is, you know, essentially it's a combining some type of vector database or, you know, on top of an LLM so that it like basically can capture enough context to send to the LLM so that it reduces hallucinations and obviously improves accuracy. That's also something we had to build and experiment with over time. Cause like, of course everyone sees this API, like, oh, let's ask it some questions. I'm sure it's going to work fine. No, it didn't work fine. So through our Q&A, we realized, oh, we should probably do this. We should probably add that. And so I think there's a lot of work and iterations gone into that.
You touched on this earlier, talking about how you added the things that only you have to distinguish yourself. Is what else can you, is that the only way that you distinguish yourself using this technology? Because, you know, as you said, these models, the GPTs, they're available to everyone with just a simple API call. So is it just your own secret sauce, or is there anything else that you need to do to when you're considering how you use this in your company versus your competitors?
Yeah, I mean, look, I always think that every product, doesn't matter what product exists, has a point of view, has a sort of an ethos to it. So I think the way we implement, you know, the GPT-like technologies, it's going to be in a Pendo way, not in a non-Pendo way. We like to empower users, not be super magical. Actually, one of the things we haven't done is a lot of companies went in and threw in a like prompt-like UI. And I'll be honest, I have a bias against this. Like it is just faster for me when I know a product to click a few buttons and to like try to and like type out sentences. Like that to me seems painfully slow. And I certainly don't want to speak to something because I mumble sometimes or whatever. Like, so we have elected not to do that. If we ever did do it, I would think the way we would implement it would have to be like very explanatory in nature. Like if you type in a question, we would tell you exactly how to actually solve that question without typing in a question, because that would be the only way I would feel comfortable shipping it, because I don't want people sitting there typing questions. That feels very inefficient. So that's an area where like, yeah, we are going to behave a little differently than say everyone else is maybe. I think one of the areas too, there is a heightened sensitivity. We serve large enterprises. So we, the first time we built anything that allows people to turn things on, turn things off, and have a ton of customization, just because so many legal teams and privacy teams are frankly so scared of AI. It's bizarrely ironic that everyone seems like they want it and everyone's talking about it. Hell, half people are saying they are AI companies, yet so few large businesses are actually allowed to use them. So we had to put in a lot of controls early, much earlier than we ever would for any other thing we build. Because of almost the sensitivity around this thing. It's like, you know, some people think that, you know, it's going to like hurt humans or whatever. So it's a fascinating thing. So yeah, I think that, and we really care about that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's probably an area that we did something a little more unique than everyone else probably did.
Do you think that it has a sort of, you know, unnecessary bad reputation, or I guess in your situation, like, do you feel like confident enough that, no, it's fine, it's not going to go wrong, it's not going to influence things in a negative way or anything like that? You know, just trying to understand like whether there's actually really a need for people to worry, or it's just like bad PR in general on AI at the moment.
I mean, okay, this is kind of like a really broad, I mean, for how we're using it and for how a lot of companies are using it, and as long as you're using like a version that's like professional and you're paying for it and you're using all the various privacy things, you probably should not be worrying about it. I can guarantee you, the way we're using it, our customers probably should not care at all. It's not going to leak any data. Like there isn't like, these are all like sandboxed. Like there is virtually no risk. Now, am I saying society in general shouldn't worry about AI? I think it's pretty healthy to worry a bit. Yeah, look, there's a lot of things that do scare me about AI. You know, we run a decent sized business and there's hackers that try to take advantage of our company all the time. And guess what? AI makes them easier to try to do those things. And that sucks. I mean, it just means our security teams need to work kind of twice as hard because like, it's easier to impersonate a human than it ever has been before. And that worries me. I worry about people creating things that look correct but aren't. That stresses me out. You know, how do we know what's real? Whether it's a picture or a video or an article, like, disinformation is one of the things that like scares me a lot today, because some people just aren't discerning enough to really ask the question, is this thing real or not? They see something, they think it's real, and then that could lead to bad decisions after. So I think there are plenty of things that worry me about AI. You know, thankfully, we're just a software company trying to help our customers save some time. So like for what we're doing, no, I think you can say it's pretty safe. But like broadly, I think it's healthy that we as an industry, we as a society, like are right to like ask some questions. And this isn't like me advocating for any level of regulation or what have you. Like that's not, well, it's not my decision. I don't make those decisions, thankfully. But I think a healthy level of skepticism and like concern and thoughtfulness, yeah, I think that's warranted.
Todd, one of the challenges that a lot of product people have is they're not in the room with the senior executive team all the time. They don't always know what all the concerns are, what's going on. And sometimes people come and say, why can't we go faster? Why can't we do this? Why can't we leverage AI to do things? What's the conversation? Is there any advice you have for product people to get in the heads of their executives and be able to educate them? This is what we need to know. This is what we're trying to do. This is how we can work better with you to execute the management vision. But, you know, we need some stuff too. So what kind of stuff should they know so that they can have a better conversation with their management teams?
Yeah, look, I think make sure that they tie back what they want to do with AI to real business outcomes, to real customer outcomes. You know, I think, you know, if they came to me and say, hey, we want to do this. What's implied in your question is, they're doing something instead of doing something else. It's a prioritization exercise. And that is like everything is a prioritization exercise, you know? And okay, we thought this last thing was the most important thing. And now you're telling me you want to build this AI stuff. Is it because you think it's cool? Or is it really more important than that last thing? Now, if you make a case that is more important than the other thing, okay, let's rearrange. I'm totally cool with it, but it's got to be a strong why behind it. I think one of the most interesting whys that even my board challenged me on when they thought we were going a little too slow, and this was right around the time we did the hackathon, it may have been just before, is look, tech in general last year, maybe even the last year and a half, has like it's the demand environment's gotten tighter. Like, you know, the whole end of zero interest rate period, and like in general, people are, you know, budgets are tightened, CIOs are saying they're spending less, growth is a little bit less in the tech economy. I mean, it is less across the board. But you know what's not less? AI. AI is more. So one of the business reasons, business outcomes for really investing in AI is it's one of the few areas where demand is at an all-time high. And if you want to like, you want to meet customers where they are, you want to like adjust to, you know, macro conditions, one of the things you can do is, you know, see what's hot and make sure that you're taking advantage of it and giving it to customers. If customers want AI, build AI. You know, one of my investors said, hey, look, like right now, like what example did you use? Something to the effect of like ice cream is down globally, but not chocolate ice cream. Chocolate ice cream is really, really hot. Make sure you're selling that. So, and of course, chocolate ice cream was the AI. So we made sure that we had chocolate ice cream on the menu, like really, really fast. And because there was a clear outcome, and a lot of it was to create a conversation. Customers still aren't ready for it, but they want to be, the thing that's interesting is they want to be partnering with companies that are going to be the leaders and not the laggards. So the last thing you want to do is like decide, well, next year is really our year for AI. Because guess what? Whether it's adding a lot of value to customers or not, it's kind of irrelevant. We are learning. A lot of your questions and hopefully a lot of my answers that I'm imparting is like, we're learning. And I am not saying the AI Pendo shipping today is going to be the AI that's perfect or like ultimately what our customers want. But boy, we're getting smarter and smarter and we're getting in people's hands and they're touching. That's how you build great product. You iterate. And if you're not shipping, you're not iterating. So I think us getting something out there fast and just knowing that we can constantly iterate, we can constantly improve and technology shifting. We're just, yeah. I mean, I think we're setting ourselves up to be a leader and not a laggard in this technology by not waiting until it's a mandate or a requirement or people have to have it. So that feels pretty good. And just, but look, I mean, it's a journey. And I think, but the more engineers can really focus on the why and the business outcome, I think that always works. And given this is such a strategic thing, actually one of the great things for engineers to know is that what is like 60% of CEOs mentioned AI in their earnings announcements, you know, in the last quarter, up from like 50% like a couple quarters ago. Like if you're talking about AI, you probably do have the executives here. Like this is actually something they want to hear about. Because their investors are asking about it. Everyone else is asking about it. You know, so if you have an idea, if you have something that's well-formed, like don't be afraid, like bring it up because people actually want it. It is on their mind and that is a good thing. Going to an executive with something that's already on their mind, you're much more likely to get airtime and find connection than not.
So we're nearly at the end of the interview. I've just got one more question for you. I asked ChatGPT what questions I should ask Todd Olson about AI and product management. I think Randy probably did this as well because he did the question prep today and most of the questions we've already covered. Randy, I'm just ribbing you. It's fine. I know you didn't do that.
No. It's just it knows me too well, or maybe I can be easily replaced is what we're finding out.
There is one though that we haven't covered, which is what are, and that we'll have to keep this one short because we've gone over time and we don't want to take up too much of your time, Todd, but what are your kind of snapshot potential future trends and innovations in AI and product management?
Well, look, I think I touched on a little bit already, but I think it's really this evolution beyond just simply leveraging LLMs to looking at these tiny models, leveraging product data, having more purpose-built domain-specific knowledges, models for product management that leads to probably tighter generative applications. That's the future. Like, do I think that AI is going to like replace a product manager? No. And it's why I'm also really careful about terms I use when I refer to product management, even analytics. Like I was just literally speaking to a customer that kept using the word data-driven. Like, I don't think data can drive a product manager. I mean, or maybe it can, but it probably shouldn't. I mean, I say it shouldn't. Data should inform a product manager. It's just it's an input, right? I think part of the magic of products and the products that we like, the ones that we talk about, the ones that are revered in our society are ones that are built by humans that have strong points of view that are informed by data. And, you know, there's classic interviews around Steve Jobs and they claim that he didn't look at any data or do any focus groups. And he may not have done a formal focus group, but like there's lots of reports of him like standing in app stores, just watching people interact with technology. That is data. It may be qualitative, it may be anecdotal, but it is data. And, but he had a point of view and that's why we like the products. And I think that AI can provide a lot more evidence and a lot more context and make them a lot smarter. And they may get something back from AI and it may set a light bulb off in their brain that sets them in the right direction and builds the right thing. But I don't know it's actually going to decide or should decide on where we're going in the future. Now, the other area that I'm also passionate about, so sorry, I'm going to go a little longer, is I do think AI, with all of this data, could help lead to full personalization within software. That's an area that's to me like the ultimate answer is like, wouldn't it be amazing if you went into any software and it asked you a few things about you and then immediately gave you sort of a AI driven dashboard, homepage, whatever you want to call it, that had the things that you wanted. And then if you didn't like something on that page, you could say, I don't like this. It disappears, a new thing comes back, and it's learning about you. I think AI can enable that. I really do. And now, what are those components? And that's where the product management magic happens. But I think the architecture of applications in such a way that they are fully personalized, I think that's something I'm interested in. We'll see if we can build it. But I think it'll take years, like a long time. But it's cool. Mm-hmm.
It sounds great. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really great talking to you today all about AI.
Awesome. Thank you. It's fun.
Thanks, Todd.
The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith,
and me, Randy Silver.
Lou Ron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/product-tank.